Swinging spells down the street, same old decks we played last week. It's MTG in quarantine. We're all alright, we're all alright. MTG in Quarantine Podcast. Hey yo, what is up everybody? My name's MJ and you are listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine Podcast, where the motto is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started here, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mdginquarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And you can pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That is inkedgaming.com. Got both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look amazing. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends. So again, you can get that over at Inked Gaming. That is inkedgaming.com. The link and my affiliate code will be in the Linktree link in the description below. And every purchase helps support the channel and is greatly appreciated. Alright, today's episode is going to be a Noah Brewer episode where I bring awesome folks on from the community on to talk about their personal EDH brewing style and just kind of picking their brain a little bit to see exactly what makes them tick, why they build the way they do, and some of the kind of cool projects that they're working on right now. So today's guest honestly needs no introduction, but if you do need an introduction, trying to channel my best Bob Barker here, come on down, Mr. Tempting Worm himself, the Veggie Wagon!
Hi, everybody.
So, hey, it's been so long since I've had you on the show. It's kind of crazy, honestly.
Yeah, it feels like it was yesterday because everything has kind of flown by, I think, for both of us. And there's been a lot of, like, big changes and a lot of growth in that time, but yeah, I guess it was a while back.
Yeah, I would say you've probably grown more. I've just kind of stayed the same at my content level, but, you know, that's what self-deprecation is for. That's why I'm the podcast host. But, again, that's not really important because everyone's here to listen to you. So, without further ado, how about you introduce yourself, what you do, and then we can get started.
I'm VeggieWagon. I am the co-host of Decked Out, your favorite Commander gameplay show on YouTube, and also I will make funny things about Magic the Gathering and put them on the internet for internet people.
Really? I had absolutely no idea you would be willing to stoop to that level to make people laugh. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I like to be down in the gutters, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So anyway, again, as like I said a moment ago, the Noah Brewer series is here to pick folks' brains about how they build their decks. So again, without further ado, and I know I say that a lot, but it sounds really fancy, let's get started with the episode here. So the first question I'm going to ask you, Veggie, is when you are looking to build a deck, whether that is for your own collection or for your work on Decked Out, which if folks don't know, they should really check out, but you know, there's an aside right there. Where do you start, honestly, with that deck? Do you typically end up starting with the commander, where you're kind of looking at legendary creatures and saying, hey, this looks really cool, maybe I should build around this? Or are you the kind of person who picks a theme or maybe kind of starts building an idea for the 99 and then finds an appropriate legendary to go with that?
It's a different process for me and for the show. If I'm building a deck for myself, oftentimes I will start with the commander. I like to have a deck that is focused around the commander. And that's the one thing I know that, like, I'm pretty guaranteed to play every game. So for me, 100% starting with the commander, building around that. But for the show, there's different needs depending on what we're doing, because sometimes we will have a particular guest on and they're like, I'd really like to play this deck. And so from that, my only constraint is, oh, it's got to be, a balanced game, but I can pick most any commanders. So usually I am starting with the deck's game plan to make sure that things are make for an interesting combination. So if someone comes on and they're like, okay, I have this mill deck, I really want to play this mill deck, I'm not going to then pick strategies that are like, oh, this is a reanimator deck, or this one is going to make sure to exile graveyards constantly or something like that. But the commander itself is less important when I'm picking those. On the other side, often we will decide on themes for the show. So it could be as simple as like these will all be Transformers commanders. And from there, then that really narrows down what I can pick from. But that's split about 50-50. So it depends on what the episode is going to be. Somebody brings in a deck. Great, I'm going to pick based on the deck's game plan. Or is it a themed one? Obviously, got to pick based on what commanders fit that theme.
So basically, what you're saying is people will come to you with an idea, and then you'll kind of take what they've built upon. And if they don't have that deck, obviously you build it for them. But I'm just curious, if someone were to come in with a deck, what kind of changes would you make to that just to make sure everything be balanced?
You mean changes to the deck that they've
Yeah, I
presented?
mean, if that was a, I guess I'm just trying to understand more of the process here. It's like, because typically when you go to, any sort of event or something like that, you're going to be taking a deck that you probably built yourself. And, I'm assuming that obviously some pieces might not necessarily mesh well with the content experience. I did a whole episode on the content creator meta. So kind of if folks out there are interested in listening to that, definitely go take a listen to that. But I would assume that, sometimes there are going to be kind of problematic cards, problematic strategies where you probably want to switch cards out. Before you hit record.
Yeah, I definitely try to avoid that as much as possible, because for sure, if somebody is bringing me their own personal deck, like that has gotten a lot of love and they've chosen those cards specifically for a reason. And so I try to leave that alone as much as possible. I'm trying to think if there were any instances where I had to straight up have cards replaced, but I don't think there have been. I don't think we've had any guest list that we had to change. But the way that I balance it is on the other end, because I'm usually building the other decks. So I want to make sure if there are cards that can be potentially difficult to deal with or make for a less entertaining game, I'll make sure that there are answers in the other decks for it. Or that they can play around it.
That definitely makes sense. Again, playing and building for content is its whole other is kind of a whole different thing, honestly, than what we usually talk about in EDH shows. Just because we're so focused on that content and that value, right? To the gameplay value that you don't want a really crummy game out there because people are just not going to watch at that point. So you finding that balance, honestly, between, building and then having a very entertaining deck is that de can definitely not be an easy line to have to tightrope on.
Yeah, and especially like where we're at right now with the show, we don't really have the time and resources to have a dud game. Some of the bigger shows that have a generous budget, if they play a game and it's not good for content, they're like, great, shuffle it up, we're gonna do another one. But we can't really afford to do that, so we really have to front load it and make sure that the decks will make for a good game, almost guaranteed.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, but how about your own building style when you're not working for the show? Like, when you're trying to build, I don't know, let's say an X-Spell commander from New Capenna, one with three colors, and something about an old worm, you know, how did those sorts of decks come together for you?
I really like presenting a unique game experience for other players. And so that is my biggest priority when putting a deck together. And I don't know if you like happen to be referencing a particular deck of mine, but
no, of course not.
But I think probably the best example is the deck I have where Rocco Cabaret Caterer is the commander, and I require of myself to tutor out Tempting Worm as fast as possible, thus dumping my opponent's hands onto the board immediately. That doesn't happen in your average commander game, and it makes for a super unique and interesting and fun game experience for other players. And so that feel is what I want for everybody. It's not always going to be exactly that, like, aggressive group hug kind of thing, but, you know, that is my number one priority in building a new deck.
Okay. I can definitely agree with the wanting to go unique. That is definitely one of my hallmarks as well. And I can say to the audience here that I've played against this Tempting Worm deck on multiple occasions, and honestly, it never fails to surprise you just how silly it can be. So, if you ever get the chance to track Veggie down at a convention, please ask to play against the Tempting Worm deck, unless you're now going to be the Zatulpa guy. That might be a problem for you going forward now. It's happening. It is happening.
I am honestly very tempted to build it, but I'm like, okay, so what is that factor? What's that, how do I turn Zatulpa into a very unique game experience? Because it limits me to mono white, and like in my brain, I'm like, okay, what if like I gave everybody a Zatulpa, or, you know, what if I turned all of my creatures into Zatulpas, or something, you know, like what's the weird thing you can do with Zatulpa as opposed to just beating people down with it? So,
I mean, how you could go again, maybe you don't necessarily have to build it in the Zatulpa as commander shell, but you could even do the kind of Slicer-esque or Corona False God thing where you're just passing giant Flappy Bird around the table, you know, with 4/8 double strike indestructible flample, you know, all the good old Timmy keywords, and just, you know, slap an assault suit on that sucker or something, and then just pass it around, have everyone else beat the crap out of each other, you know, maybe goad. So all of a sudden we end up in my favorite color combination, which is Boros. And, you know, just basically find a way to tutor out Zatulpa, pass it around, have everyone beat each other up with Zatulpa, and you're fine. So that's probably how I would build it in the weirdest way. But again, the episode's not about me, so.
I could maybe, like, put together a rule zero or something that's like, this is a, like, or like, literally from what you just said, I could do, like, this is Zatulpa, but it also has, Corona's text or something. Like, this, if I play this Zatulpa, it will get, it gets passed around the table. That's the rule zero.
Or in the same list, like, you run Slicer as well. It's just like, my whole goal is to just, you know, pass random cards around and, like, do Zedru or something and just like, hey, by the way, I'm just gonna give you this giant Flappy Bird. And, here, you can have the Slicer. You know, just kind of, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but like that seems like the kind of way that you could do something like that with Zatulpa. But anyway, we are going way off topic here, but you know, maybe we're on to something, probably not, but whatever. Anyway, moving on. So once you have selected the commander, the strategy, et cetera, and this would be, and again, please answer this both in terms of the show and then for yourself. like, what are the next steps after that? Like, you figured out the concept, you know what you're trying to do, what then?
I think then the most important thing is power level. Of course, for the show, if somebody's bringing on a deck, I got to take a look at that and determine, you know, some important things about it and how much interaction and how long the typical game would be for a deck like that, and then build some that either match it or adjust the game to what we want. For instance, like if somebody hands me a very high power deck that seems like it would win by turns, like, you know, 5 or 6, that is going to be tough for me to only build decks that match that level, because I'm not against commander games that last till turn 5 or 6, but that is not as much like entertainment in the game for a show. It just simply is a much shorter episode and less time to like showcase the guests and their personalities and things like that. So I might build a deck that's a little more stacksy to kind of make a slightly longer game, or, you know, just include some more resets, some like board wipes and things like that, so that we can add a couple more rotations into the game.
Okay, and how about when you're building your own decks? Does it differ?
I guess it does, because for myself, I usually end up building right around the same power level every time, so I don't really have to think about it. After I've picked like the commander or the strategy, I'm like, okay, what are the super cute things that I can do with this? Like, what then contributes to that unique experience? And so I'm digging for cards that I've found to be especially like fun for the table, or for cards that I think people haven't experienced before, or just ways to amplify whatever weird, wacky thing that I'm trying to do with the deck.
Okay. Gonna move on here. So you've basically built the deck and it's time to play test. How does that kind of first play experience differ, would you say, between the decks on the show where you really have no margin for error and your own personal decks where, you know, if something doesn't work out the first couple of times, you can just tear it apart. You don't worry about it.
Yeah. I mean, for the show decks, I will 100% throw them into the Moxfield playtester and fish them a couple times just to make sure, like, okay, great, they are functional, like the curve is smooth, and I like each time I feel like I have a game plan. But for my own, great, do I have a stack of 100 cards in front of me? All right, it's all gonna be live. We're gonna test it on real people, because it's, you know, if it doesn't work in a game, that's okay. There are plenty of ways to still have a good time for me and for the rest of the people. But I don't have that pressure of like, oh, but if this does nothing, that's a less entertaining piece of content.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I can see that as being a bit of a challenge because you're trying to meet an expectation. And again, if we like anything as casual EDH players, sometimes it's variance. And, you know, trying to be able to make that variance have a floor that you can reliably hit and hopefully exceed is kind of difficult. And yeah, that I would definitely have a hard time trying to balance the two. So that seems like a major challenge to try to be able to overcome.
Yeah. Oh, like mana base. That's probably where the biggest, like, the biggest difference is, because for a deck that is on the show, I will pay a lot of attention to the mana base, because you don't want a player to be stuck looking like they can do something, like, oh, I've got a bunch of mana, but I don't have the colors that I need to cast something. Because then you're like, okay, it's like the deck not working, or is this player like not, is they, are they throwing? Are they not good? You want to make sure that that is very smooth. Players can play their spells when they want to play their spells. And also, the lands that you put in should it, if they're not contributing to the mana base, you want to make sure that they give the player a lot of options, because that's also not entertaining. If a player just draws then passes and then doesn't do anything in that rotation, even if it's just as simple as, great, I'm going to activate this land to draw a card, or, you know, I'm gonna use this land to like deal a damage or something, that's worlds more interesting than just having a bunch of basics. But for my own decks, I'm like, great, we'll work this out in post. As long as I've reasonably got my colors in it, like, we'll split it evenly if the, you know, if there's multiple colors, and then we'll see what colors I need after a couple games.
Definitely, definitely. And we're also starting to see the reason why I run a lot of mono and two color decks too, because mana bases are annoying to try to build over two colors for me, especially since I'm kind of cheap and I the kind of guy who uses tap lands. So I know, I know the peanut gallery's booing me, but whatever.
I mean, hey, you sometimes if you're building like 16 decks in a week, and you're building out of like your own collection and, you know, the rest of the show's collection, you get to the point where tap lands are looking pretty good.
Definitely. It's like I still keep copies of Guild Gates around. It's like just in case I don't have exactly what I need, I can fit this in right now until I know what I need. So just even things like that, or you know, the Scry lands, or you know, just things like that, I would say. It's like I still keep those around for the few situations where it's like I'd like to have a couple of dual type lands in the deck, but mostly I just run basics, because at that point, you know, you can just run a Terramorphic or something and go get what you need. But yeah. Okay.
And
Oh, yeah.
tap lands look a lot better. Tap lands look a lot better when you are balancing four decks to play against each other, because if all of them are running, you know, a certain number of tap lands, then they end up not being an issue.
Definitely, definitely. That's the fun of the pre-con battle, right? Is that if one person has a tap land, everyone has a tap land. Yeah, pre-con battles are fun. But anyway, that's getting beside the point. Okay, so we've talked about your whole deck building process, whether it's on the show, whether it's your own personal decks. Now it's time to talk about the real spice. And that is going to be, what are some of the decks you have either are you or excuse me, you've either finished recently or are currently working on, either for the show, at least things you can tell us at this point, and in your own personal collection.
Ooh.
Maybe it's a deck that comes from a recent episode of the show. I don't know. Obviously, there's decks you haven't built yet. There's episodes we haven't seen come out as the audience yet. But is there any deck that's come out maybe in recent history that you just really excited you, whether it was the concept, the player, or both?
I think a really good example, we did in fact do a Transformers episode on the show, and Melissa DeToro was coming to film that episode with us. And so I wanted to make sure that we could set her up well as a very, very skilled Magic player. I wanted to make a deck that had a lot of options and a lot of different interactions and different lines. And we presented her, we just said, hey, you know, pick any one of the Transformers that you want to do. And she wanted to do Blaster Combat DJ. And it was, so it's Gruul, but artifacts and plus one counters. And if you watch the episode, it, I think, has been one of my most successful builds because it did exactly what I intended it to do. Things got pretty complex with the different interactions between cards, because there were there were counter doublers, and then there was modular, and then there was other. Blasters or own abilities, and you just see you get to watch her just navigate this whole complex board really, really well. But it was still matched to the other decks on the table. In contrast, my deck was not doing a lot of actions per turn, but it was playing, more powerful individual spells. It was just very, very rewarding to see a deck that was doing a whole lot, that seemed to be built well for the player, and was still balanced to the table.
Yeah, I mean, that's living the dream right there, honestly. Being able to have
It felt pretty good.
Nice. So what about your personal decks? Anything you have worked on in the recent past, or you're working on right now, that you really want to talk about?
Tempting Worm did get a little bit of an upgrade for it. I guess this is kind of cheating your question. It got a nice upgrade because it's going to be returning on a new episode of Decked Out. It's getting a second chance because it was in the very first episode ever, and kind of did the worm thing, and then not a ton else after that. So I gave it a revamp and was very happy, because originally it was just great, I'm going to do the worm thing and I'm going to have a good time. And I have one win con, maybe I hit Insurrection. Great. And then after getting to play it a whole bunch, I adapted it because I learned what some of the problems with the deck were, or with that general experience. What do I do if I play the worm and then the next player wipes the board? You suddenly have a bunch of people with no hands, no permanents, and that's not great. So I added a bunch of ways to refill players' hands, and ways to replay the worm. So great, did you just wipe away everything we did? Everybody's got a new hand. Let's try it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then it did need more ways to close out a game. Because you can, at least in my opinion, you can make a deck that is fun and weird, but it should still try to win the game. It may not be great at it, but it should have ways to do it. Otherwise, that's kind of the one thing that you agree on, in your commander games, is okay, everybody has the same goal, where we are all trying to win the game, and that puts, that directs you on what to do in the game. But if there's a player that is very clearly not playing to win at all, it doesn't feel good. So I found a couple other ways to definitively borrow my opponent's creatures to try and knock them out.
Oh, so you're letting them drop things and then you're taking them without asking.
Exactly.
Where have I heard that before? I don't know. Seems like a viable strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Man,
I do have one. This is this is one of my pet projects that I've been kind of working on behind the scenes for a while. I played an early version of it against some people before. I really like Rada Drabik of Urborg. It's Orzhov, and it makes token copies of legendary creatures when they die. But it was very hard to build it not broken And my typical building, like my average deck is mid power for sure. And the decks that I usually build for the show tend to be in that space as well. But this, I was struggling to not build it high power. And so I said, you know what? Fine. Let me step out of my own comfort zone and build a fun and interesting but high powered deck. And it's very intricate and weird, and I have to like learn, okay, cut some of these more pet like jank cards, because I have to fill some spots with some high power staples, otherwise this does not keep up at the high power tables.
Yeah, that can definitely be a problem when you're trying to go towards the optimized end of the pool, right? That unfortunately you end up having to make some of those choices where your favorite cards just aren't good enough to hang. And yeah, that's definitely something I've run into in similar veins. Like my one smart, I would say my singular focus combo deck that I have, it's like it's running very, very good versions of cards, and then, maybe not the best versions of a few other things, mostly because I didn't want to drop serious money on some of like the free spells and whatnot. So there's definitely some room for improvement on there, but yeah, I definitely hear you. It's a challenge in its own way.
Yeah, but it is it has been it's exciting for this deck in particular though, because I'm working with some like I'm using better cards. I'm playing better cards, and I'm finding out why they are better, because they do a whole lot of stuff. And sometimes going like weirdly like non-deterministically infinite using like token copies of Mondrak to then make extra copies of itself, and then swinging with a Erotodrabik with a Blade of Selves on it is really, really satisfying.
Okay. That's pretty gross. Wow.
Yeah, it's gonna be a real good time when I get that final list together.
Definitely. All right. Well, I think we've hit time today. So again, Veggie, it's been awesome having you on the show. It's been far too long, and I'm glad that I was able to pull you away from the show for 30 minutes come hang out with me here today.
I'm always happy to. I have a good time talking with you, clearly. And hopefully get to see you in person sometime soon too.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully Vegas. It should be. Yeah,
Yeah.
Vegas. All right. Yeah. How about you give the folks at home there the spiel again of where they can find the content that you've been working on lately?
Woo, I'm Veggie Wagon. You can find me at Veggie Wagon on the internet in most internet places. And I am the co-host of Decked Out, your favorite Commander gameplay show, that I do along with MTG Nerd Girl and Airball MTG. That is the team. And yeah, we just started a new segment of the show called Commander Countdown, where we will poll the general public about Commander things and then talk about what the top five answers are.
Oh, so kind of like a Family of the Feud style, except without Steve Harvey.
Yeah, I'm the Steve
Oh.
Harvey.
Oh no. No. That conjures bad thoughts in my brain. Unfortunately, being someone who does watch Family Feud once in a while, just yeah, Steve Harvey's interesting. We'll just say that. Anyway, yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. If you're interested in hearing any of the previous Noah Brewer episodes I have done on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, or just honestly any of the episodes, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets, as your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rockcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I don't remember all of them, honestly, but if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my content on there. You can also find me on the Bird site, on the Twitter site, at MTGN Quarantine. I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over patreon.com/MTGN Quarantine. Huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal, Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name is MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.